Hello and welcome everyone back to another episode of The Publisher Lab. I am Tyler Bishop and joined alongside me today is another guest. We watched the data in last week's episode with Piper. You know, we've been getting back into doing some guests as we've gotten the show back. And yeah, this one I'm really excited to have on the show. He's a close friend of mine. One of few that I probably have had more discussions with off camera before we've gotten on camera. Welcome Darnay Lucky to the show.
Thank you. Excited to be here, man, hanging out with you and to have a good conversation.
Yeah, I think, you know, if you want to give our audience maybe a little bit about your background, I think one of the things that I thought would be fun about having you on the show is you're so plugged into the culture and you have a really good sense for both trends, both digitally and I would just say like socially or even just from a pop culture standpoint. So that's an area that I feel like I'm weak on. So yeah, maybe tell everybody a little bit about your background.
Yeah. So my name is Darnay Lucky. I grew up in Carlsbad. I was fortunate to grow up there. It was interesting though, because I was like the only black kid till high school. And so I had to like find my way around. And so I started dancing. I met some friends that were breakdancers. And that's how I evolved into who I am now. And from me having dance as my outlet, I just carried on with that through high school. And then I started dancing for different artists and I became like a entertainer in the industry of dance. So I danced for like Rihanna. I toured with Rihanna, danced for Beyonce, did like Grammy Awards. So I had a whole beautiful experience in that. And like my early teen or late teens to in my 20s. And then I became a hairstylist as my next adventure. And that's why I was
easily carried over, 1A, 1B, natural transition.
Yep, just transitioning through life, man. That's what I'm doing. Just taking one day at a time and seeing where my interests are and like where are my passions and what do I desire, what do I want to learn. And right now I'm in this this area of what I do as a profession is I'm a hairstylist, I cut hair. But what I'm really showing up as is in a builder and community and becoming a student again of experience and seeing what other people are passionate about and just finding opportunities to learn something new.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, that's the creative spirit that I think a lot of our publishers can relate to because, you know, one of the things that has been it's funny because I've recognized it for over a decade and it's still true today. The folks that have started, you know, as an independent content creator, you know, 20 years ago and the one that started yesterday, there's so many that I would describe and probably they would self-describe themselves as accidentally successful. And it's because they're generally creating content about something that they're passionate about. And while, you know, whenever they may talk to their like friends about like, well, I run a website or I run a YouTube channel on fly fishing or on, you know, like, you know, a particular type of dance or something, you know, like they're really passionate about it. And if the internet has shown us anything, it's that like, if there's something that you're into, there's probably a lot of other people that are into it as well. And I think being able to sort of tap into that is something that, yeah, that I think is, it's not necessarily innate in everybody, but I think it's this curiosity. And that's one of the things that, you know, we were talking about. And I think a lot of our audience will be interested in following along, but, you know, we've been working on some different creative projects. And I think one of the things we want to do is kind of follow along like the development and the creation of it. So that's something that our audience can look forward to. But I'm interested to know sort of like, you know, from your background and everything you've done in the past, like, What sort of things have like inspired you? I know like you've had a chance to be around a lot of really interesting people, a lot of like, you know, recording artists. Like there's a certain type of creativity there. Like what things stand out to you? What things have you learned from, you know, working with those folks or what qualities, I guess, stand out to you?
It's the drive. It's in the ability to stand out in being an individual and what that takes and the dedication that takes. being focused on that. And I think it's a beautiful thing to witness is when somebody has some type of idea, no matter if it's passion driven or if it's a something in their past where it could be like whatever their why is, simply put. It's like, what are people's whys, right? And so like working with Beyonce, I didn't really get to talk to her too much because she's like the biggest artist, so she's always
Queen B.
You know what I mean? But that's another thing that I paid attention to from dancing with like the difference between being with Rihanna at the time where we were more with her and then working with Beyonce, which is like she does her own thing more, right? And then we have these times where we get to dance with her, but it's like, I don't know, a couple hours rather than just like we hang out. And so I pay attention to that and it's like, how am I utilizing time? And that's the biggest thing that I'm learning through my experiences is how do individuals utilize time, right? We all have 24 hours in a day, which we've probably heard this before, but we all have 24 hours in a day. What are we doing with that, right? So the difference between like you have UFC fighters, right? You practice jiu-jitsu, right? You're training, you train. You're in a competition with another person in a sense, right? You guys both do the same things, but who's going to be claimed the winner or whatever? But it's like you guys all train the same stuff probably, but your whys are different. And then that why determines how much time you dedicate to that craft, right? And normally it could be like, I don't know, sometimes it's like luck or you slipped, you forgot something in the moment, right? But if you are spending a lot of the time focusing on that craft, you're more likely going to be pronounced the winner, right? So I think of this being pronounced the winner in life, right? I woke up this morning and it's like, what time did I wake up, right? That 24 hours start and what am I going to do with it? So it's about finding the most beneficial times to be productive in the areas that I'm wanting to be skillful in. And I think at the end of the day, it's like, how much time did I spend doing what I was passionate about versus how much time did I spend like creating someone else's dream or passion or doing something that I really don't want to do. So I kind of look at that and then it helps me figure out how much time am I devoting to myself? Like, did I just set aside a couple hours to practice something else? Or did I set aside like multiple hours to being in my zone, whichever like brings me contentment, which is like, sometimes it's chilling, like focusing on my breath, sitting in a bathtub, dude. Honestly, okay, this sounds weird and I'm going off on a rant for a minute, but like a lot of times when I was in rehearsals, right? Work and work and work. Like we had 4 hours, 8 hour rehearsals, 4 days a week, right? And I'm talking like, I came from a breakdancing background. So I'm doing backflips, I'm doing like tricks, which requires a lot of strength. And then I'm also learning choreography. And so I'm doing that so much. So I literally like had to like die physically, you know, in order to get to this profession thing, because I had to put so much hours. And so I had to reprogram my body and my mind in order to keep up with that. And so at the end of the day, my body would be done. And I couldn't think of like doing another day, you know what I mean? Of like having to perform or even going to just a rehearsal. And so I would literally take baths. And I don't know who told me, but at the time it was like, yo, one of the guys was like, yo, you got to take Epsom salt bath.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a big thing. I know my wife, who's an athlete, she will do the exact same thing, mm-hmm. you know, like the Epsom salt baths, because it does relieve like a certain amount of soreness. But like, I think part of it is just that sort of like being able to sort of rest your body and your mind together.
Yes. Because,
yeah. When physically active is one thing, but I think, you know, a lot of people can probably relate to this. There's days whenever you might not do anything physically active, but you get done and you feel like, man, I feel like I ran a marathon today because I was trying to accomplish and do so many things. And sometimes I think that that's a really good thing. But I also think that that sort of there's a glamorous aspect of that that I think is projected a lot of times that is not necessarily healthy all the time.
100%. And see, when we share a lot of the work, and that's good and all because we're putting energy into building, right? Which is extremely important, but we also need to share the aspect of like, dude, for me, it's the bath. I sit in the bath for like an hour, sometimes even longer than that. And I recharge myself, right? And for me, it's like a moment to just unwind and just relax, let all that stress go. And it's something interesting. So I thought about this deeper, right? I like to go deep into things and like really think about why I'm doing something, right? Because that goes into the time aspect of like, is this important to me?
Yeah.
And so being in a bath literally is a warm bath. It's like the comfort. Like I think of the position that I'm in, right? And it almost is like being in a womb in a sense. Like I'm being rebirthed. I'm rebirthing myself to my ideas, what brings me ease and the possibilities. And so as I'm sitting there, I'm de-stressing, but I'm also at the same time planning my next thing. And my body's being healed by me being in this relaxed state. And so those couple of hours are so beneficial. And then going back like the next day, having rehearsals and doing that cycle again, if I don't have that bath, I can imagine how I can possibly do that. And especially show up in my most authentic self and driven and ready to produce something more, like add on to like doing a show or whatever. It's like we're always wanting to present our best selves to something, but a lot of us sometimes we don't nourish ourselves appropriately, and whatever that is for each individual, you know what I mean? But find out what is going to nourish you to keep your drive going. Doesn't matter what you do, like let's not get lost in the work, and I put in this much time, because you can put in all that time, but if you're drained, what's the point?
And I think, you know, this is something that I've noticed with publishers for a long time. And it's something both as a publisher and having grown businesses and started companies before, one of the things that has been something that I feel like I learn more and more each year about how true this is. But the creative process is the exact opposite of a productive process. Mm. And as somebody that creates content for a living, one of the things you have to be able to do is find this balance, because an extreme of over-creative process is procrastination, which is something that like most publishers can probably relate to some degree, because there is this battle at all times where it's like, you know, you just need to create content. You need to get stuff out there. But at the same time, what makes content good a lot of times is sort of like the ability to sort of, I hate to say it this way because it sort of positions it negatively, but to like waste time, almost sort of like, yeah, giving yourself the permission to just like exercise like crazier ideas, sort of like flush things out. But when I get asked a question about like something that's like maybe complex, if it's something that I'm not really sure about, but I feel like I've got the knowledge, I'll usually say like, I need to like go home. I need to go for a run. I need to like let that kind of sort of like go around in my mind. Sometimes I'll have a development problem, and I'll literally in a dream sort of think of the obvious solution. And it's not something where it's like it came to me in a dream. It's something dumb. It's something that I should have figured out like immediately, but you need the distance from it to be able to sort of like have this multifaceted thinking. And I think that that's the balance for publishers a lot of times, is you can accomplish a lot, but like if you're headed in the wrong direction, it's not all that helpful. And if you're really, really creative and you've got all these great ideas, but you can never execute on them, well, that's not good either. So that balance in the creative process and the productive process, I think, is really important, especially for content creators, because you don't have a boss. Most of independent publishers, it's like they work for themselves. And that's a skill in of itself, you know, like I'm the worst boss for me sometimes, you know what I mean? Because I'm too hard on myself, or I give myself too much leeway, and sometimes I need to be productive.
You said something that really hit for me, and it's like create distance from yourself. And I think of that as in like stepping outside of what I am doing in that tunnel vision and become an observer of what I'm doing. You know what I mean? It's like, when you watch, like one thing I love to do also is like people watch. Yeah, I mean, I like to be somewhere where there's like a lot of people and I'm just sitting. I'm not necessarily doing what everybody's doing, but I'm just observing. And through that time of observing, I notice so much.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so I think it is important for us to step aside, knowing that we have a pattern, right? If we're creating a pattern, to step outside that pattern for a second and become an observer. And this is where dance, and I'm so grateful for the experience of learning this body and how to maneuver in it. Because we focus so much as dancers, like it could be a choreography piece, right? We learn a piece of choreography and then we're just doing it over and over and over until it becomes second nature, right? Where we don't even have to think about it. Once that music clicks on, the first 8 count, you get in and then you just start flowing.
Well, not me. The moves I've got, they're not out yet, you know? But yeah, I think
you know what I mean? It's like, but everybody has this aspect of flow in whatever they're doing. And it's just the habit. And then I've learned, so to invest in creating a pattern, right, where it becomes easy and second nature, and then you step aside, right, and watch, like if you're watching yourself, you know what I mean, if creating content and stuff like that, to just take a second and become the audience of your own process. And it's so interesting. Okay, so going into this, but a story real quick. My first performance at the BET Awards, I don't remember what year it was, but it was my first time like dancing. It was with Beyonce. And the creative director, Frank Gatson, which is like, he was like a big guy at that time, and especially in Black entertainment. And he told me, I mean, I ended up messing up on this first live show. I was supposed to be hidden, right? Before we were coming on, and I was standing thinking that I was hidden from the camera, but the camera saw me and I'm dressed in an all white suit. So the eye automatically goes to the most lightest area. And so I'm just standing there behind this pillar, but I'm thinking I'm hidden, but I'm not totally hidden. Right. So I mess up, but he pulled me aside afterwards and he was like, you know, you're out there. I don't know if you can cuss on this show or whatever. But he was like,
oh, yeah,
you know, you're out there fucking up. That's pretty much like, I hired you for this job and you're out here fucking up. And he looked at me. He's so scary, dude. And he was like, you're either a spectator or a performer. You know what I mean? Because I was kind of like thinking that I'm hidden, but I was watching everybody else perform and then thinking about the place that I was in. Right. So I was in awe at what was going on, but I was in awe at the wrong time. You know what I mean? And so I was being a spectator when I was meant to be a performer at that time. But it also, when I first started, I was all about being a spectator. But then I would want to be a performer. So I remember the year before I did that performance, I was in the mosh pit of the BET Awards. Right? I got some ticket. I don't know how it happened. Thanks to my mom, because she literally hustled and grind for me to get a ticket to watch a BET performance. I was stoked. I got to watch Beyonce. I got to watch Prince. I caught a tambourine by Prince, dude. I have a tambourine that I caught, right? Because I'm in this little mosh pit and watching performers. And I literally...
Is it glittery?
Dude, I feel like it would be glittery. So it has this symbol. It's in gold. It's a tambourine. It's black and the symbol's in gold. It's beautiful. It's like shiny. Anyways. I would watch all these performers, and as I was watching in the spectator role, I would envision myself doing exactly what they were doing. Like as they were moving, I was just envisioning it being me, right? I was getting into this performer's mindset. And then during commercial break, I would literally put my hand on that stage because I was right there. I'll put up my hand on that stage and I connected to the experience. And so that's where I strongly believe in intention and action. And then guess what? 3 years after that, who was on that stage? I was. And the story that I'm talking about where I messed up, that was my first year, the following year, because I put myself into this mental state of I am the performer. And then I ended up being on them. Then I connected with it physically, right? So that physical action and being in the vicinity of it, literally it was just like, I didn't know how that was going to happen. But I just submerged myself into that mindset. And then I was on it. But the mistake that I made is once I became that performer, I went back into the spectator, right? And so in that moment, I should have just stayed in that and like, yes, I'm the performer and did my job. But that was a beautiful lesson for me. And now with that experience, I think it is so important to know what you're doing. But then when you're not in the moment of being a performer, become a spectator of what you're doing.
I think that is such an important aspect of being somebody that is creating something for other people. And if you're whether you're a video creator and you're making content for an audience on YouTube, or you're making written content, or you're doing something at a live event, the thing is that the reason why most creatives that are making something for an audience are good at it or develop, like, it's definitely a developed skill to some degree as well, is because they were a fan, they were an audience. Like, yes. The accidentally successful thing stems from the fact that, like, people maybe geek out on, a particular breed of anime or something like that, and other people are passionate about it too. So when you're creating it, you're that audience that you're making something for. And I do think that that is one of the risks that publishers run a lot of times, is that as you get sort of, like we were talking about before, like the distance, you need a certain amount of distance to like look at things like an audience again. And I think with the advent of something like AI, which we'll talk about here in a minute, I think you've got something now where it's like the work process. And I think Piper and I talked about this last week on the show, but like the work where it's like, maybe you really enjoy writing and you don't want AI to take away your writing time. Well, it's really your ideas and being able to communicate to an audience, you know, sort of like the material, the knowledge, the perspective, whatever it is that you're trying to convey to them. That's the innate you part, right? That's the part that the value that you add and bring to the content. The actual sitting down and taking the 3, 4, 8 hours to write or put this content together, that's something that doesn't have to be you. Sometimes maybe there's a therapeutic aspect to it. But I still think that you can use these tools to basically take away sort of like the grinding parts a lot of times to be more productive, so that you can sort of spend more time on the creative process or sort of like, yeah, becoming an audience member again. Becoming a spectator and messing something up, I think that that's sort of like, you know, you can fall into the trap of becoming a little bit of a spectator and procrastinating how you create something, because you get so dedicated to the creative process. You know, they always say like the enemy of good is perfect, there's something like that. But I think, you know, one of the things that we've seen in media trends, and this is the first story that we had up for today, it's how Google and Meta and Snap are sort of battling it out with TikTok for short form video. And I think, you know, short form video is a extrapolation of the trend that basically broke the trend for almost a century of, if you look at the very first piece of video content ever created, which I had to take like a history of cartoons class, because I basically was trying to graduate as fast as I possibly could from university, because I'd started a company. So I had to take this like history of cartoons class, and, you know, like back in the late 1800s, early 1900s, there you've got it, like these drawings. And then for the next 100 years, the popularity, reach, and sort of like growth of video was directly proportional to the quality, production quality. So you think about like a movie in the 60s, and then movie in the 70s, movie in the 80s, you pick the most popular one, more people saw it, but guess what? The production quality, better, better, better. And then 2000s hits, and now all of a sudden the trend, it gets decoupled, where now you have somebody, you have Charlie Bit My Finger. Do you remember that one?
Oh yeah.
Charlie.
And this video of this kid that's like, Charlie bit my finger.
Yeah.
Sorry, everybody in the UK. That's the best I can do. But, you know, you've got this video getting more views, a greater audience, and more reach than all the late night shows that are on, you know, broadcast television. And now you have not just, you know, a viral video or somebody is creating polished YouTube videos. But now you have people that are just grabbing something on their phone. It's taking them maybe 5 to 60 seconds to produce and to post it. And it maybe is getting the same audience as The Tonight Show, which the overhead is significantly different there, you know?
And see, it's so interesting because there's a part of me when hearing you say that, it's just like, oh shit. You know what I mean? It's like, is my attention span shrinking and my awareness to be able to focus on something for a certain amount of time? Because a lot of times it's like, if the video's too long, oh, next. You know what I mean? And it could be something of value there, but it's, we got to be quicker. But at the same time, with that being said, we're getting fast. The fact that you can grasp an audience that, you know, The Late Night Show or whatever has a huge, like, we know that's a big production and all that that goes into that, but a person can literally just pick up their phone and create a snippet of something and then have the same amount of views is awesome.
I think, you know, you brought up a really good point, and I think it comes back to, you know, what we're talking about in the beginning with distance, where I think the industry fell asleep. And it's one of the reasons why independent publishing over the last 20 years, I've said like the last 10, I feel like have been the golden age of sort of web content, because, you know, even at the beginning of the internet, we had what people would refer to as web one, where the web worked one dimensionally, meaning you had to be able to afford and have access to servers and understand like early internet technology. And then you could publish something to the internet that anybody could read, but not anybody could publish something to the internet. So it did expand sort of like, you know, access to media and information, but not for everyone. And then you have web two and you have the rise of mobile, where now everybody can publish content for everyone else. And because of that, it's like, it's the substance that you realize, not the production, yes, that makes the difference. Because, you know, the fact that you can make a video on your phone that maybe people really want to watch, not just because it's silly or it's viral, but because you have content or information that is valuable. You know, I think the two movies that are out now, Barbie and Oppenheimer, they're saying it's, you know, they're bringing back cinema, and cinema is like, it was on life support, and then these movies came along. But I mean, think about the last decade of film. How much original content was there? You know, so many things are just so bland and dull, but they have these multi-million dollar budgets. So you think about the overhead that goes into a sitcom television show, which is, you know, not much different from another one. And I think, you know, this is where it's like, you can see why, you know, a YouTuber or something like that is twice as popular as, you know, a sitcom that's canceled after 3 episodes. It has nothing to do with the, you know, amount of money invested. It's, you get really close to making something and, you know, everybody forgot to do something original or unique. Yeah. And I think that that's, you know, a challenge that publishers need to sort of like tackle. It's like the benefit of being an independent that you can do something different.
The benefit. And it's like, why did the ratings and stuff go down in cinema and all that? Is because they weren't giving us what we wanted, the value of what we, like the direction we wanted to go in. We started catching on to things and it's like, that time is being wasted, right? If we're not benefiting ourselves, why are we going to invest our time in watching something, doesn't matter how much money or whatever it went into production, but what was the value of what we were watching? That's interesting you say that, because now I'm like, there's individuals that are literally creating content and have thousands of viewers, thousands of followers. But it's like, what are we sitting there watching? You know, is it creating value for us to, is it benefiting society and the world? Is it motivating us? And I think that we need to get back into building skills rather than just trying to build popularity. You know what I mean? Everybody's really popular right now. It's easy to be popular, but there's not so much talent. And to me, talent, hard work beats talent any day. In the aspect of like you were talking about dancing, right? The only reason why I may be a better dancer than you is because I spent hours on hours on hours in that area, right? If we're talking about learning how to build the freaking internet or social platforms, you spend way more than I have. If we're talking about jujitsu, you fucking put me in a chokehold instantly, and I'd be like, what happened? Like, if I am not putting my my time into a certain area and conscious about it, I'm not going to build skills in it. So I think it is important for us, as we have a platform, evolution has taken this long for now, each individual can be heard. That's so much power, and it's such a beautiful gift. And this is the thing where, like, you know, people talk shit on the internet and where technology is going, but no, dude, this is amazing. It all comes down to, are you conscious enough to know what this is and what are you doing with it? What are you wanting to do with it? Like, why are you wanting so much attention? Have we even looked at that? Like, there was a time where I was like, yeah, I want to be cool. I want to have this car. I want to have this house, all the certain stuff. And then once I had the opportunity of being able to get into that, I didn't realize what came with that. You know what I mean? And then I changed my perspective. I was like, yo, I just want to be known in my town. I just want to have my needs met where I don't have to struggle.
Yeah. You know? And I think, you know, that is it's really interesting, because I think it speaks to the fact that, you know, the benefit of, you know, being autonomous or being independent and being small to a certain degree is your agility. And the ability to sort of, like, you know, like Meta, Google, Snap, Facebook, Amazon, you know, even Apple. You can look at somebody like Apple, the first, I think it's $3 trillion company in history. And so it's really hard to match in more than 50% footprint, like mobile phones across the world. Like, it's really hard to imagine a world without Apple. But if there's one thing we know for sure, is that in the future, there's a world without Apple. Mm-hmm. And, you know, without fail, it's very easy to imagine that they're going to be the exception, but there almost never is. And, you know, I used to show in different presentations that I would give, some of our publishers may have actually attended at some of our events in the past. But one of the things that I used to always show at the start was slides that showed, like, headlines where it's like, Nokia, is there anyone that can disrupt the mobile king? You know, and it was like in 2008, you know, and it was like Nokia phones and Blackberries. And then you've got things like, it's like, yeah, does Yahoo have a monopoly on search? Should the government break up Yahoo? You know, and, you know, it's just funny, because those problems take care of themselves in a lot of cases, because you have Google, Meta, and Snap now talking about short form video and how do we make short form video. You know, Barbie, Oppenheimer, the reason why they're, you know, like, saving cinema in quotes is because those are original, like, pieces that are, you know, I guess subjectively, but, like, pretty well praised for being either original or just something that's, like, well produced and different, something that was done really well. So the format obviously doesn't matter, because film, cinema, it's been dying a slow death. But the second something original, good, or new comes out, it's like everyone rushes to the cinema. So the answer is not like, I need to do short form video because that's what everybody is doing. You can do old, you know, like, people still make records. There's a whole, like, industry scene around vinyl. It's not the technology, it's not the medium, it's the content.
The content.
Yeah.
So think about those two movies, since you brought those up. Barbie literally, like, changed how, especially.
I thought you were going to say change your life.
Yeah, I mean, it changed a lot. I mean, that movie I haven't seen it yet. And I don't care to see it, but the fact that it's gaining so much popularity, and it's like, now I'm curious why.
Yeah. You know
what I mean? It's like, why? I don't want to just jump on board to the Barbie thing. I'm not going to show up and, like, go buy a pink outfit and look like, you know.
I mean, you never know.
You never know, but I'm going to have to, yeah, anyways.
Never say never.
So, but how many people, and especially, I think, how many women wanted to be Barbie at a time, right? And then the blonde hair, the outfits, the figure. And then how did that carry on through the society? Look at individuals now. You see the power that message had? And so is it the aspect of we're wanting to gain a movie, or we're wanting to get this message back out? And that's why it has so much popularity, because people have now created patterns and habits to it. And are we aware of that? Like, a lot of people now, when to go see that movie, guess what? They're all dressing the part, right? Yeah. They're dressing the part and going to partake. They're, that once again, that identity is coming back in. What we talked about with the AI, yeah. And like identifying it, something that isn't real, but then creating an identity to it. And then what is that connection? How deep is this identity going to go? And I think that those bigger powers that are like cinema, right? That we're literally putting out content. They're the only ones putting out a message, but now we all can put out a message. Their platform is fading and it's going to be non-existent pretty soon, right? And so this could be a last attempt to yeah. try to go back into that habit, that original thing that created a lot of patterns for generations and generations. You know what I mean? What's that other movie?
Oppenheimer. Yeah.
Oppenheimer. What is that about? The atomic bomb?
Yeah.
Right? What else drives the world? Wars?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And if you think about why are people in war? It's because who has the ability to create an atomic destruction that will take out the whole world? That's how we depict on who's the most powerful country and who's going to be a leader in this, is who can literally demolish the world in an instant. Who has that capability? So this is extreme time. This is the most valuable time in history to be aware of self and what we're partaking in, right? So that way we do not get led into somebody else's dreams or games and stuff like that. Us have the power to showcase truth platforms, right? And to get eyes on us if we have a message to be shared and to create new patterns that are going to be beneficial to everybody.
And I think, you know, you mentioned at the start about how, like, you're like, I'm probably not going to go see Barbie, but I kind of want to see it now because I want to see what it's about. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's the telltale sign of having something original and good, because if you would have asked me 6 months ago, are you going to see the Barbie movie when it comes out? And it's like, no. Objectively, no. I can't imagine a circumstance in which I'd see it. And now I'm like, I'm kind of curious. Mm-hmm. And it's one of those things where it's like, that's how you know you're creating something that's original. Whenever you're drawing in people that are not your core audience, and you are basically converting them into, you know, somebody that would be, you know, naturally just like following, they're gonna, you know, watch or, you know, go see anything Barbie. But it's whenever the people from the outside that have no interest are all of a sudden interested in what you have, it's that storytelling ability. And this is where, you know, what you were talking about, sort of like you know, the idea that you can sort of like get caught up in all the different aspects of like, this is the focus, and then the distance that you get away from it. As a publisher that's independent, I think everybody, and this is not just for publishers, but I think it's a wider spread thing for entrepreneurs, where you have this imposter syndrome. And because of that, you may be convicted about something or think that something is original or good. But the more sort of like success you have sometimes, the harder it is to act on your convictions, because you start thinking about all these other, you know, the baggage that comes with it. Google, Meta, Facebook, they're kind of like, they've almost written their own death certificate in the future, because their growth and their success, all of a sudden, it's like the risk of doing something, like taking a big risk. I mean, Meta changed their name to Meta and went all in on the metaverse. And then, you know, the metaverse, we're not in it right now. Yeah. And it's fair to say, I don't think we're going to be living in a metaverse like tomorrow either. So that's a big swing, and it didn't pay off. And their stock price was like, you know, a fourth of what it had been, you know, and, you know, there's a lot of predictions about like what will happen now. And Facebook is kind of like, a lot of people are down on it. But and then you wonder like, OK, well, when's the next time they're going to take a big risk like that? You know, and you have a lot of people in your ear. So the larger that you get, it's safe to say, well, look, short form video is in. Let's make short form video. But you miss the point where it's like, people don't want short form video. They don't want long form video. I talk to publishers all the time. Should I make a long video? Should I go after these keywords? Should I do this or should I do that? And the answer is, for every single person and everybody that's making content, it's different. Your own data is the best data. And it's that way as human as well. It's like, you know, how did you find like a career that you were passionate about? You know, like the most surefired way to not find the right one for you is to follow someone else's advice of what they did for them, because each person is going to be different. And, you know, I think it does beg this interesting question about just sort of like our relationship to what's going on with other people and what the internet has done to that. One of the things that I think is interesting, we were talking about before the show, this is an article in Adweek, it says social media is dead. And this is just a personal thing, but anytime I read a headline article and it says something is dead, my first intuition is there's no way that's dead. Mm-hmm. But that is sort of how I feel about this. It says, welcome to the swipe era. The advertising industry is experiencing a rapid change with eras shifting quickly and social media evolving. Brands have invested heavily in social platforms like Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and Snapchat. A new era is emerging. And the launch of Meta's Thread showcases the shift towards algorithmically curated subcultures and communities. And this is where we talked about this actually last week, and then again a little bit this morning before we started recording. But, you know, to me, we lump a lot of things into social media that are very different. So we have to kind of define them. And I do wonder a little bit about like what the evolution of what we think of the social media will look like in the next 10 years, because social media as it stands, where you follow people in your social circle, your mom, your dad, your friends, that's, you know, original Facebook, MySpace, Instagram fall into those categories. But then something like a TikTok or Snapchat, I'd put in the former category, but then you've got YouTube, you have TikTok, you have these emerging platforms that you have Twitter falls into this category, where you're not really following your social circle, you're following figures, or you're following topics or news. And those things are distinctly different in my mind. And I don't know if this is a shift or if this is a linear progression towards something else. I don't know. What do you think?
This is going to be a big discussion. And before I get into this, I need to use the restroom.
Yeah, we can take a short break.
Short break real quick, because that's going to be heavy.
And we're back. It's one of the beautiful things about recording is and having a great producer like our friend Manny here.
Yeah.
And I was actually telling him before we took a short break, whenever I used to do the broadcast for the Jiu-Jitsu World Championships, we'd be on the gymnasium floor, and it was usually you and another on-air talent, and there was nobody that could be a replacement, and there was no breaks because it's just ongoing. It's just live the whole time. And so you would do something like, hey, Sean, so what do you think he should do right here? And then you just throw your headset off and you would run to the second floor because it's where the only bathroom is. So you'd just be there 8 hours a day just drinking coffee and water. And you just sprint up there and then you'd sprint back and you'd sit down and he'd be like, so Tyler, to answer your question, that's what I would do. And then you're just like out of breath and you're like, right, so back to the action. So yeah, one of the beautiful parts about not having it be live is, you get to throw those edits in.
Yeah. And that's important too, to be able to take those breaks. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Be an observer if you need to be, or whatever that is, but take that break.
And I think with, you know, what we were talking about a few moments ago, in audio world, magic film, we were talking a little bit about how, you know, the evolution of social media, being distinctly different from something that is like, is actually social, community driven, where it's like, these are the people that I know. And this allows me to, you know, keep some kind of like ongoing connection with them because maybe I don't see them as often, to being something that's almost more sort of like, instead of plugged into the people that I know around me, but I'm plugged into the things that I'm interested in through figures, whether it's on YouTube or Twitter, or the news or topics or subjects. You know, it's like why I think the internet is great is you are allowed to find other niche communities that may be on the other side of the world that aren't close to you, but those people aren't your social circle. But, you know, I don't know, maybe these lines are getting blurred now where it's like, you know, the person that you met on the internet in, you know, Budapest is, you know, maybe closer to being your friend than somebody that you've grown up with because you guys share these interests. But to me, there are very distinctly different forms of what we would sort of put into the bucket of social media.
So I feel like it all comes down to, like, well, one, if social media is dead, right? Well, with all death comes what? New life. So maybe as what we knew it to be, it's not going to be the same. And that version is dying off, but it's still definitely alive. It's just evolved or being recreated into like something new, a new form of it. It all depends on your views on the energy that you put into it. Like, oh, it's dying off. It's not the same, right? Some people are really attached to their old ways when things are changing, and they perish with it.
And I think that, you know, this is the thing that I'm happy to be a canary in the coal mine for our publishers, because I think I've talked to publishers of all shapes and sizes that have almost three different reactions to sort of the evolution of AI here recently, and sort of like the rise of it and the threat that exists for content creators as well. We have a writer's strike right now, and that seems to be one of the big narratives of, you know, this entire thing of, you know, how do you take AI and bring it into the equation, and the unions for writers and for the Screen Actors Guild, you know, they want assurances, or they want to basically create a collective bargaining that includes something about AI in there, because it is an existential threat to, if you write on a television show and AI can write it. And so you might say, well, with something like that, like, you know, why should, you know, film producers or people that are showrunners, why shouldn't they just use AI to write the shows if they can do the job? Like, why do they have to use these writers? And you could make the same argument about websites and publishers. And that's where I think there's this fear of like, well, AI might do this job that I do. But the question specifically with AI right now, at least, is AI, the only reason it can do those things is because it's learning from all that's existed in the past. So if we wanted to shoot another, you know, a whole season of Friends, AI could write that, but only because it's got the first 8 or 9. I don't know. I didn't watch Friends, but
What? Dude, okay, hold on. Thank you. Because I was never a huge fan of Friends, and I just got so much shit about it. You know what
my
I mean?
Wife loves
I've never met anybody else that's just like, yeah, no.
I honestly, I couldn't tell you what it's about. I'm assuming Friends.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's one of those things where it's like, yeah, I mean, it, a good example of something where it's like mass popularity isn't, you know,
it's just, yes,
complete popularity. Yes. And I think, you know, with that, you've got this question about like the value. Once again, it's the value of being a content creator, being a publisher. Isn't the medium, isn't the technology, it's the knowledge, it's the experience, it's the storytelling, it's the things that you bring that are unique, that you know an audience wants. A machine can do the same thing that Google and Meta are doing. Those things are like living things, they're machines as well, where it's like they're trying to optimize for the goal, not necessarily the objective. And what I mean by that is, or maybe that's even reversed, but the way that I think of it is, you know, if your goal is to generate a profit as a business, it's usually not a great business, because if you're trying to make money, you often lose sight of what you're doing and like who you're doing it for. You lose sight of the customer. And the same reason why, if you're creating content and you're a diehard, like, you know, film buff or something like that, it's like you love film so much, you're trying to create the content that you want to read. And that creates success, because that's what other people want to read. But if you create, you know, film buff content because you think it's going to, you know, advertisers will pay you a lot of money for it, so you, you know, research or whatever, but you're not really passionate about it, you know, like somehow the drive to create a profit in that actually, you know, like it devalues the disintegrates the, I guess, the opportunity for success there. And I think it's true with a lot of these things where it, you know, the thing that makes it work is sort of like the experience and the love and the passion that goes into it. And that's where I would say with our publishers, it doesn't matter if, you know, like you might be afraid because you've only published content to the web before. You've never created video, or you've never, done some kind of live experience, or you've never hired writers before to write your content. The tools and technologies now are making it easier to experiment and to be agile, so you don't get stuck doing the same things that you've always done or the things that you know. These things are allowing you to basically, as an amateur, like, you might not be a developer right now, but today, as it stands, you could learn very little and all of a sudden produce what, you know, it used to take somebody a decade of experience to do from a development standpoint because of the tools that are available. So let's not discount those things, and let's not be afraid of something that realistically is going to give us our only opportunity potentially to succeed in the future. I think that's something that I'm presently aware of, but I don't know what's your cursory take of AI? I know you're probably not as active in using a lot of the emerging tools and stuff like that as somebody like Piper, who was our guest last week on the show. So I'm curious, like, to what degree have you experimented with AI tools or technologies? Or my wife has not used any yet. Yeah. So,
I used it once to write like an essay, right? And it was for, I forgot who this, I can't remember this guy's name, but it was on Instagram, and he's like a big deal on Instagram, and he was like giving away Teslas, you know what I mean? And then he wanted you to use the AI to write like why you should win the Tesla. And so I used it then. And during that time that I was using it, I realized how well it can form sentences and all that type of stuff, and utilize what I'm trying to say in a way which is more like well-written, right? Which was nice because it was able to get my point across in a different perspective, which brought awareness to me on how I could better educate myself on like how I'm forming sentences or like wanting to communicate. But then I also thought about like, okay, I put action into using it. So what is it that I'm wanting to step outside of myself and allow AI to take control? Well, because my focus was just winning that Tesla. You know what I mean? I wanted that Tesla. And so I used it to form something better than what I thought I could offer. And so when I think about that, I allowed my skill or whatever I've done, I put it in the hands of something else, rather than trying to do the work to figure out how can I have that Tesla myself? How come it's not me offering free Teslas? How can I get to the point where I can offer free Teslas? You know what I mean?
I want you to be at that point.
Dude, 100%. And if that is something I truly desire, I would get there. But with that being said, is I know it's going to require work. So in my experience of things, everything that I've accomplished in life, everything that I've achieved, it took work to get. And it feels good knowing that I put in that effort and that time to work to now have it in my possession or whatever. But as soon as I give up that ability, that power of like showing up to do the work, then it's not going to hold as much value and weight. So then it made me think about like, if I create a pattern in using this AI to do all the hard work, is it still going to hold as much value in my perspective of actually gaining that experience? Like if I work my ass off to have the currency to own that Tesla, right? Am I going to behave with that Tesla differently from if somebody just gave it to me and I won it? Like, which one is going to place more value? And that depends on each individual. You know, that's just, I'm just sharing my experience, but like, what is that meaning to you? Is it going to be more, you're going to have more pride and ownership of that if somebody gives it to you? Or you're going to have more pride and ownership if you worked for it? And so I think that's something to just consider when we partake in the AI. And is it making things easier for us in like, I don't know, the need? What is the overall need? And is it, what is the reaction? Like, what is the consequences of our needs and desires? Like, what are the effects of those? Because a lot of times we don't ever think about that.
I think one of the things that I've noticed, especially recently with this, and I very much agree with you in that I think this is especially true with AI, and this is would be my advice to publishers, is that it's very easy to see this technology that has the abilities to do things that you can't. So a lot of people on our show maybe great at running a site, maybe great at creating content, maybe not great at site infrastructure and deployment and development, right? And they would look at that and say, well, because of AI now, I don't even have to bother with that. I can hire a developer, I can use AI, maybe a hybrid of the two to take that off my plate. But in doing that, what you've done is you've essentially taken this core piece of your business and you've understood it less. And one of the things that I can tell you as both an entrepreneur and something that is not unique to me, you'll hear it from many, is that there's such an extreme value, and you were mentioning it too about the sort of like the value of experience, being able to work hard for something, appreciating it. My wife and I joke around all the time about like when we got married, the gifts that we got each other when we first got married, didn't have any money. You know, it's like you scrape together what you can, you buy them a birthday gift or whatever. And it's like, you know, now it's, we might get each other more extravagant gifts, but it's like, you know, you look back and it's like almost sort of like very nostalgic in looking back how we gave each other those gifts and how much we valued them. Yes. Because it was so much harder to get. In the same way that you build experience over time, you really value the information that you get. It might be easier to get now, but you may be a better steward of the information than somebody that's younger that came along and was able to acquire it easier, because it's this sort of like struggle along the way and the value that you extract from it. The same thing for publishers where, you know, I would say use AI as sort of like something that fills your gaps in skills. Don't use it to replace something. Because one of the worst things that you can do as a business owner is completely outsource something you don't understand. It's the best practice to not do that, because you get these huge cost overruns, especially in development projects a lot of times, because you're like, I need you to build me a X or a Y. And you're saying build an X or a Y when you actually just want something that's maybe going to do something even simpler than that. But because you don't know, like, that can be done simply another way, you say, build me an X or a Y. And the difference there could be 10 grand in development costs and overruns. But the developer is just like, I don't know what you want. I heard you say build an X and a Y. So that's what we're going to do. And the value of something like AI is you don't need to know how to do development to be able to say, this is what I want. It can get you most of the way there. But even if it can't like get you quite over the edge, the experience of seeing what it pops out and what you can do with that, my development skills have extrapolated significantly, partially just because I know enough to know what to ask, and then it'll give me back sort of, you know, answers or code. And then I'm like, oh, I see how that works. And then my understanding of it grows. So you can kind of look at it as like an expert assistant that you have with you at all times. Mm-hmm. And that would be my perspective on how you should maybe approach using it in your business.
Assistant. That's it. It needs to be used as an assistant. And I think that's where we can really truly see the benefit of these things. Because as soon as we start having it do the things that require, like, to me, I think what separates us from other animals is the consciousness that we have. You know what I mean? If we're trying to have it do conscious, like to think for us and to like make decisions that are based on not just the current moment, but thinking of the outcome, then we're going to lose sight of like what this is really about. Like, why did we create the AI, and was it supposed to be helping us achieve? Like, we need to really know what we're wanting to do, like how we're going to be more effective for ourselves. And then if we need an assistant, utilize it. But like, first build the value of ourselves. Like, you have to know what you're presenting, right? It's like, I'm a hairstylist. A lot of hairstylists have assistants, right? They get to this certain aspect of like, they have so many clientele come in where it's like, okay, I want to make, I want to expand this business, but I don't have enough hands. I can only do what I can do as an individual, as one person. So I can only take in so many clients, right? So then they start getting assistance, on, you know, shampoo or whatever, so they can focus on this, and they're getting more flow in. But at the same time, like, is it beneficial to have that overflow? Like, what is the need to bring in more people? Obviously, in the hair world, they want more money, right? They want, what's the opportunity we can make more money? Why do we want more money? Like, let's start really thinking ahead of why we're going to put effort into things, because there is going to be a domino effect and we're creating pattern and habits. And so I think we need to take consideration of what is going to be the pattern that we're going to create using AI, right? Is this going to be something that literally takes my opportunity of learning something new, right? Or is it going to just do the stuff that I don't even think about? I think of in society, I always think of it as like a whole picture. So this human experience that we're having, and we're involving AI in doing stuff that normally humans would do. I think of like, climbing a telephone pole to fix the wires for how we, you know, use telephones or whatever, even though that's fading out too, because we're doing stuff underground, but like stuff that literally is just a task, but dangers humans in the sense of like, that's an individual that has a family climbing this high thing just to connect some type of wire that could literally be gone and perish. And that's going to have a huge domino effect if they have children, like they have loved ones, you know what I mean? So it's like, use the AI to do certain jobs that we're doing that literally could just wipe us consciously out. Like, the more that we can keep human beings on this planet and raise consciousness, then the stronger we are as a whole. Like if we're talking about before with the movies that are coming out and like our crowds, when there's a whole crowd, people's like, why are everybody onto that, right? I don't care about Barbie, but the fact is, whatever they've created, whatever message they're putting out, a whole audience of human beings are attentive to it. I don't want to dress in pink and all that, but I'm curious of what is it that they're giving that is literally having everybody on this community sense of attention and awareness? Like, what is everybody wanting to know? Because that is power. If you can get everybody as a whole on that level, right? What are we using that power for is another question. But obviously, there's something about that that is like, is useful. But what are we utilizing it for? And so if we're utilizing this AI to help benefit humans and our abilities to be conscious, all about it. If we are not aware of what this can do, and we're utilizing, we're losing consciousness, and we're seeing human beings losing their value, as in like, we don't care about their lives anymore, or if we can put a price tag, it's like the human lives is getting less and less and less, right? We should be more valuable. We should definitely always be more valuable than the AI because we created it.
Well, the thing that I find really interesting about this, and we'll kind of close on this, because I think this is a point that I've been trying to make for a while, and I've kind of talked about it a little bit on the show, but there is going to be this push and pull over the next decade, and it's going to be the desire because of these technologies and the allure and the benefits that they provide and the value that they provide is going to push and pull us to where people could be pulled to be more like machines, where we'll adapt to the way that AI is being used, which is not really a great thing. You know, you think about like the people that are in the Amazon warehouses that are, you know, going to pick up the, an order comes in, they have to run, they have a timer that goes off. It's like, you have to be there within 1 minute, you know, and scan the thing, and then they scan it and they get there because that keeps everything logistically on the right track. That's treating humans like a machine. It's exactly. Like, this is the, metrically, this is the average time that it should take them to get over there. And all that kind of stuff. We don't want that. And I think this is where the takeaway for publishers is as well. It's like you mentioned the salon thing about hiring help and to basically like scale, the number of appointments that you have. Machines are great at scaling things, but the problem with scaling things with pure machine is that you can extrapolate out and you can go really far and advance something a long ways, but potentially in the wrong direction. So like, you know, potentially you could scale a business to where it's like you've maximized bandwidth and maximized profit. But now it's like you've maximized the bandwidth. That's the time that you have and that you've committed these resources to the machines that are doing these things. But you could have potentially taken a step back and said, why am I scaling this thing that is basically like, this is how we're doing things now because I don't have infinite scale. So now if I can hire people, maybe I don't want to try to just do more of what I'm doing. Maybe I need to do something that's different. And that's where the bigger opportunity is. And this is, if you're a publisher right now, I would be thinking less about how do I use AI and emerging technologies to do more of what I do today. I think you're crazy if you're not using it to, you know, create more content or better content right now. But you should be thinking about like, how does this free you up to do the core things that make you more human? How do you create better content this way? And it's that pull maybe in the other direction where it's like, I think machines maybe will allow us to be more human, because right now, what do you do at your desk if you work at an office? Exactly, yeah. You sit in front of a computer all day. And like, why? Because you are like, people are sort of like the cogs in that machine. You know, it's like we have conveyor belts now where robots assemble things. Before that, there was people doing that. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not bad that robots do that now. That was not a great, safe human job. Not to say that you don't still have assembly lines, but the Industrial Revolution's got some dark history there.
100%. And then that makes us think about, what are we even producing? Like, right? Certain things, the AI or the robots will not be able to do because it needs to have that human touch to it. But the human touch is what makes that item or that product that we're creating more valuable. So now we really need to think, are we just throwing out tons of garbage to people, which literally we can have robots make because it doesn't really require consciousness to it? And is that item actually making our lives more beneficial and better? You know what I'm saying? It's like certain stuff about a car, you see these car factories and those robots putting together these cars, right? But there's other aspects and components that the robot can't do that the human does. And so which one is weighing more? Is it, I mean, weight for us in the aspect of like beneficial for us as humans and creatures of consciousness? Like, is it the part that the AI is building, or is it the part that the human is building, right? And so we need to watch those that are producing products and huge things that we are consuming, because once again, the things that we consume needs to benefit us, right? Just like having a bunch of drinks that are full of sugar versus like water, you know, whatever I consume is going to have an effect on this physical being, which goes into like my mental state. And then if my mental state is not getting nourished with the right things, then I'm just going to promote a bunch of garbage.
And I think, you know, that's the trap, I think, also. And if you're a publisher looking at things from the perspective of like, you know, comes back to the very beginning, something we always say on the show, it's like, make content for your audience. But the thing is like, you mentioned the example of the assembly line and, you know, like people putting together the robots doing it. The reason why it's being done to begin with is there's a demand. People want vehicles. They don't need a human made one or a robot made one. They just need a vehicle, and the value is the same to them regardless. Communication is different. Mm-hmm. Communication, why are robots not making content for other robots? Why is AI not making content for other AI? And why do advertisers not want to put ads on content that no one will read? Maybe AI will read it, because AI doesn't buy anything today, at least. I mean, it's a scary thought experiment to kind of go down that rabbit hole. But the biggest thing with that is that, you know, the demand is for communication, for information, for knowledge. And that is not something that a machine and a human produce equally. And I think that's where you want to look at something and you go, how do I use machines to bring more humanness to what it is that I do? You know, you think about how could I use it to have more time with my family or my kids or whatever, like that makes you more human. Trying to figure out how you use AI to sort of like replace you, where it's like, I'm going to just have AI respond to my wife whenever she texts me, right? Like that makes me more like a machine.
Yes.
Because it's like, it's taking, I'm trying to scale the human things with machines versus trying to use the machines to scale my humanness. And it's a weird juxtaposition, but that's what I'll leave our audience with today.
Yeah, 100%. And like, figure out why or how this could be beneficial to you. Cause it's going like, and it's beautiful. It really is where technology and stuff is going. It is a beautiful thing. You know what I mean? But we do need to be conscious. That's all I'm trying to say is let's bring awareness and consciousness to things before we start creating habits and patterns. Because as us having this human experience, a lot of things that we do is so not even conscious of because we've just been doing it. So that's why we continue to do it. You know what I mean? But if we do want to see us have more abundance in our lives and to continue to share more love and more thoughtfulness, like we need to take a step aside of the habits and patterns that we're doing for a moment and really think about what are the repercussions? Why do I desire this? Why do I want that? Why do I want that Tesla? You know what I mean? Do I need that Tesla actually? No, I have vehicles already. So I could be using that energy to build myself up stronger in other ways rather than like utilizing something just because I want something. So let's just know what we're doing, like what we're doing. And is it a want? Is it a need? Or is it a desire? You know what I mean? We figure that out. But like, just take a moment to take a step back. Take a bath.
Yeah, take a bath.
Take a bath and think about it.
That can be the thumbnail for the episode.
There it is.
So I want to thank you for joining, man. It's been a fun conversation. And I know one of the things that if you're interested and you've enjoyed having Lucky on the show, one of the things that I think you'll be able to do is we're working on a couple different projects right now. And one of the things we want to do is we're always espousing on the show sort of like being able to share information. Independent publishers get stuck in these silos a lot of times, and you get stuck trying to figure out like what is everybody else doing? Am I on the right track? This kind of imposter syndrome. And even though you might be told like, oh, your best data is your data, it's hard to have the confidence when you're really on an island. And I think one of the things we've been wanting to do more of is to be able to share experiences of how people are growing, what types of things they're doing, and to make that more relatable. So in some of these projects we're going to work on, we're going to be following along, showing like the kind of stuff that you're doing, some of the tools that you're using, things like that. And should be a lot of fun. Yeah. And we'll regularly have you back on the show and you can kind of fill us in on how stuff is going. And thanks a lot.
Thank you, man. Cause I learned so much by having these conversations, and like this is an avenue also that I don't have skills in, and which is like the repetition. So it's an opportunity for me to learn something new. And once again, that's part of my why, is like wanting to learn new things, and then that helps me better to maneuver through life. So I'm like grateful to step into a new environment not knowing things. Like, it's good that I'm not aware of certain things, so that way I have the opportunity to know.
You
know
what I mean? And now I know, like, you know, I'm gonna have to take more baths, I guess, and go see Barbie.
There it is. Yes. Yeah,
take baths and go see Barbie. The takeaway from today's show. Thanks everybody for watching or listening. If you have questions or commentary on the show or something like that, publisherlab.org, and you can leave us questions, comments there. Anything that you guys are interested in or want to hear us talk more about on the show, that stuff is great. We lean into it. Anything you guys give us, we latch on to. Which reminds me, Manny, before we're done, kick check.
Oh, kick check.
We've got it, at least one member of the audience that is always interested in which.
I'm going to have to step the game up for the next ones because the boys out here.
Are those some Crocs?
You know, some Crocs. You know, my comforts.
Yeah. We've got... They've put me in this rough spot because now every time we record, I feel like I've got to go deeper into the collection. So I got my Travis Scott's today, but I think I'm dwindling now. So to have unique kick check, I'm going to have a conversation with my wife, I think. So
I like those. Those are sweet. You know what I mean?
We're trying. And at least one member of our audience is interested. And it may just be one, but... You know what? That's what we do it for you. And that's why you should go to publisherlab.org and give us feedback, because otherwise it'll just be sneaker content. Thanks everybody for watching, listening. We'll catch you next time on the Publisher Lab.